Good afternoon. A little short, so can you hear me? Okay. This is a project that I've been working on for a little while. It's an ancillary study to a large-scale clinical trial that's funded by NIH. So when I started this work, I was actually at the Johns Hopkins School of Public Health. I'm now in New York at Columbia. And both institutions actually have a clinical site of this study. No disclosures. Okay, so there's been a lot of research on the built environment over the past 15 years. I'm sure a lot of you in the room are aware of it, specifically related to neighborhood SES and food availability, which is kind of the areas that I focus on. It's been shown that they've been associated with obesity, with poor eating habits, and other weight control behaviors. So the question is now, where do we go with a lot of this research? And so Anna Diaz-Rue put out a review article in 2010 about neighborhood research and where should we be going. And, of course, you know, having more longitudinal studies to understand how neighborhood impacts obesity and weight long-term is definitely recommended. So my study is trying to address some of those gaps, and it's also addressing a new issue, which is how does neighborhood influence response to an intervention, and this is specifically a weight loss intervention. Okay, so just a little bit on conceptual framework. This is just to set up the stage that, you know, things like residential segregation and inequalities influence neighborhood on a physical level and a social level. And so here, you know, I'm interested in mostly, you know, food environment, neighborhood SES, and how they influence behaviors such as weight control behaviors, dietary patterns, and so forth. This is just another way to look at it, where what we're all interested in here is the energy input, energy expenditure, and there are lots of different things that are upstream, being, you know, built environments, food environments that influence these. And then there's also a lot of individual level downstream factors that influence those. And so everything is in the complex pathway of how we achieve healthy weight. Okay, so the first part of this study was to look at neighborhood factors and weight-related health behaviors. So there have been a lot of studies looking specifically at dietary patterns, so fruit and vegetable intake and so forth. So what we set out to do is look at environmental influences, specifically environmental aggregate level socioeconomic status, to see if it was associated with weight, weight-related factors, and weight loss after the intervention. So just a little bit of background about the Look-Ahead study. It's funded by NIDDK, and it's a trial to examine the long-term health effects of weight loss. So the main objective of the study is to get overweight people with diabetes to lose weight. They're followed up long-term, actually over 13 years, and the main outcome for the study is to see if cardiovascular risk is reduced. So the study's actually in about year 8 now. Year 4 data is actually available. And there's about 5,000 participants in the overall study. My ancillary study looked at the clinical sites that are actually in the Northeast. That was pretty much for convenience purposes, and also because the demographic profiles of these particular cities are fairly similar. Pittsburgh is a little bit of an exception. So we looked at the Baltimore, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, and New York sites. And this is just to show all of the different field centers for Look Ahead. So we're here in the Mid-Atlantic. I do hope at some point to be able to get funding to look at all of the clinical sites, because I think there would be a lot of interesting questions about the study has very good racial and ethnic diversity, and so even looking at regional differences and looking at different racial and ethnic groups. Okay, so we geocoded the Look-Ahead participants' addresses to census data, and we linked the census data to the individual level data from Look Ahead. And then we use multi-level statistical analysis to look at our outcomes. We use ArcGIS to geocode, and we took addresses that were matched with at least about 80% certainty. And so there were a few that dropped out, but not very few. And we linked to census data, which you all are probably very familiar with. There are a number of different characteristics that we could have looked at. I used a lot of different SES indices. Anna DS-RU has an index. There's the Kubman index. There's a lot of those. But in the end, I ended up looking at the percent poverty in neighborhoods from census data, and then also looking at commercial data on food sources. Data on the number of grocery stores, the number of convenience stores, and the number of restaurants. And in this data, I could not separate fast food restaurants from full service restaurants. Okay, so this is just an example from the Baltimore site, what we were looking for. This is Baltimore City here, Johns Hopkins is over here in East Baltimore, just to show that our participants were actually spread out all over the city. They weren't concentrated in inner city, concentrated in poorer areas of Baltimore, and that's similar for the other sites as well. For the look-ahead data, because this is a clinical trial, we had all kinds of clinical data. So that's a huge strength of this study. Measured weight, health status, and what's also unique is these behaviors that are specifically related to weight. So we had weight loss behaviors, and you'll see in the table things like, are you attempting to lose weight? The intervention is targeting certain behaviors, so not skipping meals, eating breakfast, you know, counting calories, those types of things. And then also, what type of resources are you personally using for weight control? Are you, you know, joining, in addition to this program, are you joining other weight loss programs? Are you, joining fitness centers and so forth? And then we also looked at depression. Okay, so I'm just gonna show you some of the results of the eating behaviors portion of it. This is the neighborhood indicator, and so I looked at the percent who in the neighborhood who were living below poverty, and then at food stores. So surprisingly, none of the poverty indicators were associated with these weight control behaviors. But if you focus on the food environment, on the restaurant data, and these are tertiles of restaurants, so this is the second and the third tertile compared to the first. The third tertile means there's more restaurants in that neighborhood. You see that people who had more restaurants in their neighborhood were more likely to eat breakfast at non-fast food places and actually more likely to eat lunch and dinner. So it's just speaking to the food environment. A lot of people, when they see this result, they say, well, there's a lot of restaurants. Weight control behaviors will be poorer in those neighborhoods, but it speaks to having a lot of different options and a better food environment. And even though we adjusted for individual level SES, it could also be some indicator of socioeconomic status. And then when you look at weight control behaviors too, focus down here if I can get the mouse to work. Yes, focus here. These are beta coefficients. So people who lived in areas with more restaurants were more likely to be engaging in behaviors for weight control related to food. So as I talked about, counting calories, joining programs, and physical activity. We looked also cross-sectionally at the neighborhood with the relationship between depression and health status. And not surprisingly, this has been a finding that's been very consistent in the literature, that this is now focused on neighborhood poverty, that those in the highest tertile of neighborhood poverty, and that's focusing here on the third tertile because that's the most poverty and where the strongest association was shown, you see that people with neighborhoods with more poverty have worse physical health, worse mental health, and worse health overall. So then we just recently started looking at the intervention, okay? So what we hypothesized, and because there hadn't been studies here before, we had to go on our own gut. We hypothesized that people who had better neighborhoods, either better SES, better food availability, or so forth, would do better in the intervention. So, you know, they're getting this, you know, gold standard intervention, PhD level nutritionists, and so forth. So we thought that would be a synergistic effect. But that's not actually what we found. If you look at this graph, these are the intervention groups. So it was a main result of the overall study that the intervention group lost substantially more weight than the control group. So these are the intervention groups and these are the control groups. They are split out by tertile of neighborhood poverty. So no association in the intervention group. Only in the second tertile of poverty did we see that neighborhood influenced weight loss in that second tertile. And then when we looked at the four-year results, no change. So it was not actually what we hypothesized, what we actually saw, and, you know, the results aren't as strong because they're not in both tertiles, you know, higher tertiles of neighborhood poverty, but what we saw is that the control group was more likely to be modified by the neighborhood, okay? And so, you know, I'm open to suggestions on interpretation, but our interpretation is that, you know, if you were not chosen for the intervention group, then you more likely use your environment, you know, in a better way to be able to lose weight. You know, you were a participant who selected a weight loss trial. You obviously wanted to lose weight, and so you're accessing your environment to be able to do that because you didn't get that intervention. So in our select group of weight loss trial participants, restaurant availability was associated with weight control practices, and we think this speaks to a better food environment. Neighborhood SES was associated with poor health status, and neighborhood socioeconomic status was associated with weight loss in the control group, but no association seen at year four. So this was at year one that we saw an association. I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors on this ancillary study who've been working with me for a long time, the look-ahead study overall, the look-ahead participants, and NIH who funded the study, NIDDK funded look-ahead, and I'm funded under NHLBI. Thank you.